Hi, I'm Jennifer Vine, President and CEO of the Education Foundation of Sarasota County and your host for Education Conversations, a discussion forum to share innovative and relevant thoughts, research, and ideas on education today and to help prepare students to thrive. Welcome to this episode of Education Conversations, a kindergarten through eighth grade perspective. We have all heard of millennials and Gen Z and a variety of characteristics that are ascribed to these generations. And while we at the Education Foundation don't necessarily subscribe to labels, it is sometimes helpful to categorize age ranges by generational groups and knowing a little bit more about our current students who are in school. And right now they fall into two different groups. We have Gen Z students, and those are students who have been born between 1997 and 2012. And then we also have the youngest generation, and that's Gen Alpha. And those are the ones that were born after 2012. So Gen Z is currently in middle school and in high school. And the Gen Alpha students are the ones that are right now in elementary school, many of whom are going to be graduating soon and moving up to the precarious and fun, awkward middle school years. Gen Alpha will be the first generation to be raised entirely in the 21st century, and they are predicted to be the most tech-savvy generation in history to date. So this begs the question, who are the students of today? Are they different than previous generations? And if so, are we prepared to meet their changing needs and to help them thrive? So we thought we'd bring in some really strong guest speakers with us today to help us address some of these questions. And our guest today, we have with us eighth grade math teacher and department chair at Venice Middle School, Joe Connor. And we also have an Education Foundation board member with us who also serves as Sarasota County Schools District Program Specialist, Carrie Johnson. Both of these two folks are very highly effective teachers in their own rights, but they both have been honored as Sarasota County School Teachers of the Year. Joe is the current Middle School Teacher of the Year. And then back in 2021, Carrie was recognized as the District Teacher of the Year and even was a top five finalist as Florida Teacher of the Year. So I think we're going to learn a lot from both of them. Carrie, by the way, prior to her role as a program specialist, taught kindergarten for 16 years before she listened to her own Say Yes philosophy. And this past year is when she accepted the new position to be working as a program specialist. So I'm thrilled that both Carrie and Joe are with us today. So welcome to Education Conversations.
Thank you. Thank you. It's good to be here.
Thank you for having us.
It's going to be a fun conversation. So, Carrie, I want to start with you. You were a kindergarten teacher for 16 years at Fruitville Elementary. Did you do all 16 years at Fruitville?
I did.
That's amazing. Yes. You have many students that have carried on and probably remember when. But you have had an entire career working with five-year-olds, and I can't think of anyone better that probably has some really good insights and knowledge on how kindergartners have changed throughout the years. And so what are you seeing in how students have changed over the 16 years? And maybe a second follow-up to that would be, has the pandemic created anything significantly different? Was that something, you know, that should be noted?
Gosh, when I think back to the beginning of my career and compare it to my last year in the classroom, students and just education in general is completely different. When I started teaching, we had rest time. We had more creative play time embedded in our day. And ending, it was definitely, we pushed them more. The expectations were greater. And just in general, students were just different. I think a lot of that was because of some of the technology that is at their hands and accessible to them today. But really, pertaining to technology specifically, I noticed they came in with not as strong capabilities with fine motor skills, being able to use scissors or crayons or hold pencils. And personally, I relate that to, you know, they're used to using iPads and phones and technology, and they're just using a finger to scroll. So, and again, just with them being different, I think that students are used to seeing screens and bright colors, and it's easy and fun to stay engaged in that. And then that doesn't always translate to the classroom when you're just standing in, or sitting and listening to a person. We're not as engaging, and it's just harder to keep students engaged for long periods of time.
That's a great observation. I'm kind of curious, and this is a little just more of a random thought I've had. When you think of the sameness of students, some of the behaviors, and then you're talking about some of the differences, can you give some adjectives to what those differences might be from when you, what year did you start?
I started, I believe it was 2005,
okay.
2006.
Okay, so 2005 mm-hmm. to a 2023 student. Can you just give some adjectives of the differences?
I feel like students now are more perfectionists.
Mm.
They don't quite have the ability to problem solve independently compared to in years prior. And just kind of more afraid of change.
That's interesting. Wow. So Joe, gosh, let's bring it over to you and the middle school child and how that student has changed throughout the time. And specifically, you know, you as a math teacher, how many years have you been in the classroom now?
Gosh, it's been about 12 years.
Okay. And so you've certainly been in the classroom long enough to also see some of these changes. So what are you seeing at the middle school level?
Well, I think, you know, Carrie was saying that students are so used to being engaged with technology that, you know, as math teachers, we're always trying to get kids to put pencil to paper. It's always a struggle to get kids to show their work. And I think it's harder now because they're just, our programs are online, our textbooks are online, and they don't understand why they should write it down if they're putting it into the computer. And I think for us, at least my generation, I didn't grow up with computers in the classroom, so sometimes I think there's a little bit of a translation gap between what I understand the academic process to be and what kids have experienced it to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's kind of one of the bigger challenges. However, they're also very adept at the technology. Everything is going in that direction, so they're good at adapting to that. And mm-hmm. I think it's almost more us as educators who have to adapt to their way of doing things. My expectations for them to write down and, you know, write all their work on paper. I mean, when I have them write their work down, they take their paper and they start in the lower right-hand bottom corner and start just doing scratch work.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was a kid, I did it in rows. You know, we had a very specific way of doing it. And you can teach them that, but it's there's so much online engagement that it's hard to develop those paper skills. And they're not necessarily relevant all the time. So I think getting to where the kids are and meeting them where they are as far as their technology use goes is important, especially as math. I know it's the same in reading. Reading is all online now, so, you know, getting a kid to open up a book, you know, that's different than looking at their phones, you know.
Right.
We ask kids what they do for fun, and they play video games or go on their phone and hang out with their friends. And some kids go outside, and there's still that. There always will be, but I think a lot of kids are just always engaged with technology, just as adults are these
right.
days.
Sounds like technology has been both a blessing and a curse in terms of student development. And you're seeing both the, you know, manifestations of that. I'm kind of curious to take a little bit of some recent research that came out with, you know, the nation's report card
mm-hmm.
And the declining math and reading scores. And just recently it was noted that the math scores had their steepest decline. And
yes.
I think it went even back to like 1990 or something like that. Significant decline.
It was the biggest decline since they started taking these records, I think.
Yeah.
And that's it's significant. It's concerning. But I think, you know, it is evidence that what happened with the pandemic interrupted development in their academic skills. The kids are going to be behind for a little while. The kids who are in eighth grade this year, which is one of the grade levels that they test for
mm-hmm,
that nation's
mm-hmm.
report card, is eighth grade, and I think it was fourth grade.
Mm-hmm.
The eighth graders were in fifth grade when the pandemic hit, and they missed a lot of the rigorous development of those skills that you really need in middle school math. It's across the board. I mean, I looked at some of that data too,
mm-hmm.
and the data for the, you know, Florida students tracked right with the nation. We were right in line with where the nation was. So I don't think it's unexpected. I think it definitely presents a challenge. There's always these skills that kids
mm-hmm.
will struggle with. So I think we're seeing that, the basic skills. But I also think it's a lack of just academic skills. I think they developed this online way of doing things, which the rigor wasn't there in the classroom. The expectations changed. When I was a kid, the momentum was there from kindergarten through 12th grade. It was the same thing. We worked hard. These kids had a break that I don't think any of us has ever have ever experienced. So that momentum interruption, I think, is as big of an issue with their academic achievement right now as anything.
And Carrie, would you comment on that?
Well, and I think it just kind of goes back to the expectation, like I spoke earlier, from back in the day compared to now, the level of expectation on students is definitely greater. And when that's interrupted, it's harder to catch up. And now it's kind of, what do we do now? How do we continue? How do we close that gap? And it's a lot on teachers, it's a lot on students, and it's definitely a collective effort, and it's going to take time. We always say we're lifelong learners, and it's just kind of trying to keep up to figure out how can we close that gap and maybe even utilize some of the technology that students are always using. And we do have a lot on our hands. Technology isn't always bad, but it's just, it's going to take some time and just continuous learning.
Yeah, I think that's a fair observation, and knowing that we're trying to strike that balance, right, with knowing technology's not going away. It's only going to continue to accelerate and be a part of all of our lives. And we're now dealing with a student body that is truly, they are the technological natives. But where is that balance from your perspective? Where does the interaction of the human connection come in? And has that been a reflection of the generational differences that we've seen from Gen Z to Gen Alpha?
I mean, I think that's a huge question. And I think there is a lot being placed on teachers. I think we have a lot of other things that we are keeping our eyes on as far as students' emotional well-being, their mental well-being. There's a lot of things that we face just in the classroom that's always been there, but I think there's more either that we are aware of now or that we have access to do something about. And I think that the human side is just the teacher part. I think having a teacher in the classroom, and that's why we are there. You know, there's always online classes. Adults take online classes, but especially students when they're developing, they need that human element, and that's what a good teacher is there to provide. We can help guide them through the technology, but they need somebody teaching them and showing them and giving them the support, the encouragement that they need.
It comes down to definitely having a strong, explicit instruction from a strong teacher. I mean, that's the core of it all, and them modeling and keeping students engaged and showing how students can learn from students and learn those conversational skills, both socially and academically, and really utilizing the technology to support the teacher and what the teacher's instruction is.
Right.
So I think that human interaction is crucial, and that it all stems back from that, because you cannot replace a teacher with a computer.
I would agree with that. And I think that's one of the observations we continue to hear throughout our different podcasts that just continues to percolate up, is just the value of that human relationship and the value that the teacher brings that is beyond just being the instructional facilitator, if you will. And so, Carrie, just to dive a little bit further into that, because again, as a district or statewide top five finalist, you've seen across the state of Florida really strong teachers, in your words. What are those qualities that they encapsulate and demonstrate?
I really have been so lucky to meet teachers all across the state, and it's just nice to see that there's like-minded people surrounding our students that want to push students, that are committed to this work, that want to continue their own learning to do what's best for students, and are just excited about it, want to showcase it, want to share it with others. It all stems just from really being excited about this work and wanting to become stronger, because even a veteran teacher who's been doing this work for years, there's still room for growth. They still should feel as excited as they were when they began their career.
You have a great enthusiasm for that. Joe, would you add anything else to what she commented on?
No, I think she really hit the nail on the head. I mean, yeah. I think it's the belief that you can do something You know, we read a lot about mindset these days. Mm-hmm. That's kind of in the current atmosphere of what we're learning. But I think it's really true. Believing that you can make a difference in your students' achievement, believing that you can be an effective person in the classroom, that's really, I think, half the battle. And having that enthusiasm and just wanting to continue learning, there is, I mean, there's always new stuff to learn and things are always changing. There's always new studies and new ways of doing things. And it's interesting. And sometimes it's hard to keep up with, but it's also exciting because you know there's always new things that you can try.
Were you going to add something
else? Well, I think it's, yes, teachers need to be excited about what they do, but I also think that needs to be communicated to students because I could be as excited as I want to be, but my students might not know. And you need to showcase that and tell them that you are continuing to learn. And they need to hear, because I think really the teacher sets the tone for their classroom. And if they're excited about coming to school, it's because their teacher is excited about what they're doing and they can really feel that.
Right.
So it needs to be communicated to students.
And I think what you are both also demonstrating is that as the generations of students has changed, so too the teachers have adapted to that. And being a continuous learner is an essential element of being a strong teacher. Is that a fair summation?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I've always heard that, but it's until I, and just recently, like I'm continuing my learning and it just makes me want to learn more. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot to know. There's a lot to be strong in the world of education. Mm-hmm. And it's ever changing and we're just constantly trying to keep up.
Wonderful. I'm curious to know if you all could give, for those listeners who are joining us today, and maybe it's parents that sometimes don't feel like they can fully relate or understand because the classroom is so different than when we were students ourselves. Can you give us like an inside peek as to what are some of the most significant challenges that you all are facing as teachers as you're working with the changes in students so that they can better understand how the environment or the situation is different than what it was when we first went through that? So again, whichever direction you all want to take it.
I think one of the biggest changes is just the amount of alternative distractions that their kids have now. They have access to so much information. They have access to so much stimulation all the time that I think when I was a kid, we had time to get bored. And I don't think kids have time to get bored anymore. And I think that it's like Carrie said, they're expected from kindergarten to meet these academic requirements. Mm-hmm. And there's a little bit less time for just play or whatever, for just being silly. And I think as teachers, we have so many things we're trying to get to that it's easy to forget that they're just kids still. Mm-hmm. I think a parent looking in would probably wonder if we have time to get through everything, if we're able to give kids the time just to have fun and be themselves. And I think that's one of our challenges. But I also think just making sure we have that connection, making sure that we're being an excited teacher, communicating that is helpful. And then communicating with the parents as well, I think is one of the most important things. If you can have that, then you've got, if the parents understand and they know that you have an open line of communication with them, that translates to the ability to work with their students, right, with our students, and helps a great deal.
So I have two of my own children within this generation that we are talking about. And so I can completely relate both from a teacher's perspective and a parent perspective. And I tell my kids all the time, my personal children, mm-hmm. that you're too smart to be bored. We can be creative. We can problem solve. You can find a lot to do because without that constant stimulation, they don't know what to do with themselves.
Right.
So it is, I think it's important to allow students to not always have a, or children, not just students, but just children in general as a whole, regardless of the age, to have time that is not just structured and planned for them. Because there's so much learning that happens within that unstructured time that I think people forget that they're learning while they're playing and while they're role playing or whatever it is, doing art or a craft or whatever it might be, there's still learning happening. But I completely agree with you that there's too much stimulation around, and it's okay to just bring it down a notch and allow them to explore on their own.
That is actually really good advice that I think also applies to all of us adults as well. I think we're all surrounded by so much stimulation and everything is on and we're powering through. I don't know if that's certainly we've seen technology do that. The American culture sometimes, you know, furthers that and advances it. So maybe we all would benefit from a rest, you know, get off the grid type of thing.
Put your phones down.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
I think there would be some balance to that. Well, that's really very, very sage advice. Again, as our listeners are, you know, leaning in and better understanding about, the students and the struggles and the challenges, as well as what teachers are also dealing with. You know, the Education Foundation, we're here to help make sure students can thrive and the teachers have the supports they need. You all have both benefited from the Education Foundation, but if you can share maybe even to our listeners, what are the ways in which you all, as teachers or as the voice for students right now, what are ways in which the community can provide support for you all?
I think the community, there's always room for volunteering. And again, going back to that human interaction, another person to come in and read to students, have a conversation with students. Students want to be heard just like adults. Mm-hmm. To me, they're just adults, just smaller, and they want to be heard. They have thoughts, they have opinions.
That's nice.
And I think volunteers and just being surrounded by as many positive influences
yes.
as can be, that's always a success.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think getting members of the community in just to talk about what they do as, their employment or what they do with their lives and how education has contributed to that. I think it's a middle school issue, but as math learners, they all want to know why they need to know this. When am I ever going to use this? How am I ever going to need to know this math? Do I need to solve an equation in my real life? And a lot of times, you know, the answer is, well, it depends. You know, I mean, I haven't used an equation today, but using mathematical thinking is going to be important
right.
for your whole life. And the older you get or the more experience you get, the more you realize that. And it's hard to communicate that to an eighth grader who just doesn't see it yet.
Right.
And having members of the community who can talk about what their use of math is, at least in their jobs or just in their regular lives. I mean, math isn't just a job thing. It's a thing that is beneficial just for itself, you know, and understanding the beauty of math and being able to communicate that. So I agree, having members of the community, that's a great way to support the efforts of teachers.
And just to add on to what you're saying, to me, math is not so much, like you said, about an equation, but it's about the thinking and the process that
yes.
happens and that productive struggle, mm-hmm. which, like we said earlier, students just want that quick, that stimulation, that quick fix, that answer, I want only the right answer.
Mm-hmm.
And that productive struggle is part of that future career. Not,
yeah.
not so much just the equation, but just the thought process that goes into
yeah.
trying to problem solve.
Absolutely. Being able to work through a difficult problem and then sometimes messing up and having
yes.
to go back and figure out where you had a mistake and that developing that grit and that determination
yes.
is really important because you've got to be able to push through things when they get tough.
I think that's so true.
Yes.
And those are actually really strong life skills that you can develop
Absolutely.
By just persevering through a difficult math problem, quite honestly, because that can
Absolutely.
Actually push a different breakthrough, and then it increases your level of comfort that then can raise the bar. Because what we also know is that learning really happens when you move into this elevated level of discomfort.
That's right.
So I think that's actually
Absolutely.
A really great point. So now I'm going to have to go do some math problems.
Yeah, yeah.
I need to test my own ability.
And
oh
just to
gosh.
Know that it's okay to be wrong.
Yes.
Too. You know, I
yes.
with math, I'm wrong all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's okay.
And I've worked with some, tutoring some other students at higher levels of math, pre-calculus, and even to calculus. And I look at a problem and I think, wow, I have no idea what I'm even looking at. And so I understand sometimes what our students feel. They don't know what they're looking at. But there's that point that you think, well, if I work at it just a little bit and look at it this way, you can get there. And
yes.
so there's that growth mindset piece to it that if I can't figure this out right now, I know that if I stick with it, I can figure it out.
Right.
And that's one of the biggest lessons from math, I think.
Gosh, Well, you two are inspiring teachers for sure. And certainly you brought some great insights on kind of the changes of students, you know, from when you started to even today. So thank you so much, Joe and Carrie, for joining me for today's fascinating conversation. And I think one thing that became very clear is that we do need volunteers who have skill sets that can either read to a child, maybe do a math problem, maybe even mentor our youth. And so we certainly have opportunities for you all to get involved in our schools and support our students. And so we certainly encourage you to visit our website at the Education Foundation, which is www.edfoundationsrq.org. And we just really appreciate you guys listening to today's podcast. And be sure to tune in to our other episodes of Education Conversations. For now, this is Jennifer Vine signing off for the Education Foundation of Sarasota County.